Well, the presidential election has come and gone, and now Stephen Bassett joins us again as we talk about his campaign for disclosure. Up next is Stephen Bassett with Linda Moulton Howe and I on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen Bassett, a leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence and the human race. He's a political activist, lobbyist, commentator. Stephen, also the founder of the Paradigm Research Group, executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, also the executive director of the X Conference, and of course, you know him as a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM.
You know, Steve, what I thought about almost immediately upon the election of President-elect Obama was, as the next 24 hours we heard that John Podesta was going to be working in his administration, that the last time that you and I talked about John Podesta, it was in the context of the Sci-Fi Channel looking at Kexburg, making some sort of legal appeal. As we're talking in November of 2008, what has happened to the legal action that started through Sci-Fi? And if John Podesta was at the heart of that, is it possible that he might do a briefing himself for President Obama?
First of all, I don't know the status of the legal action, but there is the larger picture here is quite profound. The Sci-Fi Channel set up the Coalition for Freedom of Information. We don't know whether the Sci-Fi Channel just decided to do it and called up John Podesta and said, why don't you come on board with this, or whether they were approached to do it with the idea that if somebody in government wanted this. The point is that John Podesta appended himself to that initiative, Coalition for Freedom of Information. He spoke at the National Press Club twice, calling for the releasing of all UFO documents, the truth to the American people, saying the people can handle this. If you go to YouTube, you can put John Podesta in there, you'll get these videos. They're right there. He did it in October of 2002, 2003. He was also in some documentary videos talking about this. He was fully outed on this issue. And, of course, he's tied to the issue through the fact that he was the chief aide to Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative when Rockefeller was trying to get Clinton to be the disclosure president, issue amnesty to witnesses and everything else. He knows everything that's going on this issue in terms of the politics going back to 92. And one of the reasons that people may know that is we've made a great deal of effort to tell them. I mean, we've got websites about it. It's up on the internet. I've been talking about it on radio for almost 5 years. John Podesta is in this issue big time. Bill Richardson, former Secretary of Energy, came out on the issue in 2004. I believe the Democrats had something planned for 2005, but they lost the election. They went quiet on the issue, and now they're back. In that 4 years, the connection between John Podesta and the UFO ET issue has only grown. And in spite of all of that, he is selected as the head of the transition team and according to one New York Times article, is writing a sample inaugural address. This is not an accident. None of this is an accident. I believe the Democrats have been planning to do disclosure under a Democrat administration for a while. It's being discussed and dealt with at the intellectual behind-the-scenes level, right, at the level of a Podesta. The Center for American Progress is the perfect center point here. I believe John Podesta will likely be a key figure in the disclosure process. He will be the interface between the new president and the internal management structures.
But, Steve, couldn't it be that Podesta only knows a little bit about Kexburg and knows that the government is sitting on a gigantic iceberg of which UFOs and the phenomena and all of these leaked documents having to do with non-humans are out there? The Clintons knew it. A lot of people knew it. Everybody who's worked in government hears these rumors. He may not have any detailed knowledge. He may not have the goods, so to speak.
He doesn't have to have the goods. And any individual case is really not important now. We're way past that now. What I suspect, almost near certainty, is that Podesta is informed one way or another by inside. Remember, he was the chief of staff to Clinton in the last 4 years. When you're chief of staff to the president, people want to see the president. They come to you. And so he's had ample opportunity to be informed. He doesn't be shown everything. Be informed that, yes, there is an ET present. This is an issue. We're going to have to deal with it. That's all he needs to know.
And right? What would it take to leverage truth out of, let's say, Majestic 12, assuming that something like it still exists and that it has a policy of denial in the interest of national security?
Well, there are a lot of things leveraging it. One, the fact that other nations are looking increasingly like they may go ahead and announce disclosure themselves independent of us. Two, the media is starting to cover over this issue like crazy. I've logged in over 1,000 mainstream news articles this year alone. I'm up to 981. Witnesses keep coming forward. And, of course, George keeps bringing people like me on to blab about the issue, you know, over and over again.
I don't let it go.
He isn't going to give up. But I believe that there's plenty of people inside that want to move forward. What is needed is we need to add a little leverage to make sure that the Democrats don't change their mind or have their feet turned to clay because of some invasion, some bomb going off somewhere, whatever. In other words, we don't want events to intercede. We want disclosure in the spring. And in that regard, it's interesting. Barack Obama brings four very significant strengths to the potential role of disclosure president. Here they are. First, if the United States is going to be the first nation to disclose, and if you're going to essentially tell not just the U.S. citizens but the world, all right, that, yes, there are extraterrestrials here and we've known about it but we couldn't tell you for national security reasons but now we're going to tell you now, it would be helpful if that person was held in very high regard by most of the rest of the world. And guess what? It turns out he is. His Q rating out there is off the charts, okay? I don't recall we've had a president with this kind of Q rating in terms of if people of foreign nations, perhaps Reagan.
Okay? It's been a long time.
Secondly, if you're going to go to a world that is overwhelmingly filled with people of color and tell them there's extraterrestrials here engaging the human race, it might help if the person telling them, or at least the person in charge of the nation telling them, is a person of color. All right? Third, Barack Obama is an innocent on the issue. I have no doubt that he hasn't the slightest idea, or at least he has no information whatsoever and may not have even thought that much about the ET issue. There's nothing in his career that shows that. That's a huge asset. Why? Because when such a president says, I've dealt with people inside the intelligence community, we've gotten this information, we're bringing it to you now, the people can't rise up and then yell at him, well, why didn't you tell us before? Right. Why, you knew about this before. Why didn't you tell us? No. I've learned it. I've told you. Oh, that's wonderful. That's really
when
good.
I found out about it, that's what he'll
when
say.
When I find out about yeah. it. Now, these are substantial assets, all right? So in many ways, he makes an excellent disclosure president. Fine. Now, but the world is complicated. That's why as part of the global disclosure movement, you know, it's not my disclosure movement. It's a global disclosure movement. The PRG's latest initiative is to make sure we close the deal on this. We want it in the spring of next year, early in the administration, because if the administration doesn't do it early, that truth embargo is going to become their truth embargo by the next winter.
But they've got some rough issues ahead of that.
They've got Stephen.
Economy, Iraq, Afghanistan.
But I can make the case. I can make, you know, give me 4 hours, George, and I'll make a case that this could help them in every single one of those issues.
You really think so?
You get disclosure, you get that ET tech. And if the energy systems are as good as we think they are, if they're good enough that after a reasonable period of transition, you can help people heat their home every winter for $4 a month. If you can bring the price of gasoline down during the transition to the new energy systems down to 80 cents a gallon, you have solved an enormous amount
of
problems.
You've also saved GM and Ford at the same time.
All kinds of stuff. You know the impact that technological revolutions have had on industry and countries' ability to generate wealth. Well, that stuff is there for us, but it's sitting in the military research labs underground in the West, classified up the yin-yang because, well, if it were to become known, people would want to know where it came from, and there goes the truth embargo. Mm-hmm. And the truth embargo, no more barrier. And so the situation now is ripe. We must close this deal. So, million facts on Washington, home-based at factsonwashington.org.
F-A-X.
Provides all the information for anyone in the world, we don't care who. Love it. Out of the country, love it. To send a letter, best. Fax, better. Email, better than nothing. To the president-elect's senatorial office, which is fully in play, saying, I want disclosure. I want that technology. I want you to be fully briefed. If they tell you don't have a right to know, fire them. Get somebody that tells you do have a right to know. And I want congressional hearings for the witnesses that are ready to testify. We want these things and we want them now. All right? Now, the letters are coming in. I've already gotten 200 notices already, just 2 days. I've sent my letter. Now, what I don't know is how many people are sending a correspondence and not notifying PRG.
Right.
I don't know the
right.
ratio. But, hey, we got 77 days. We're going to pursue this all the way through to January 20th. People are coming on board every day. In fact, Shirley McLean, very fired up about this recent election, got in touch with me. I'm going to interview her. I think it'll turn up on her website and her stream at 5 or 6 p.m. on Sunday. We're going to be talking about Obama, talking about the million facts. I think I'm getting some links on her site and so forth. So she's on board. She's excited.
Tell her hi for us. She was on our show 6-7 months ago.
I got interviewed by Roll Call Magazine, the number one newspaper on the Hill. I'm getting other media calls. I've already done 37 interviews, and, of course, yours was key. That was on November the 2nd, that Sunday night, just before the election. We got a Facebook page up, a Facebook group page, Million Facts on Washington. Got about 500 members, more coming in all the time. Facebook is spreading the word. It's starting to filter through the networks and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Can we get a million letters and faxes by January 20? Of course we can.
Yes, you can.
When the media starts seeing that mail, and I'm going to be posting, by the way, a lot of those letters on my website very soon, after getting permission, of course. When they start seeing this mail and it starts pouring in week after week after week, do you think the media is going to say, well, you know, there's no story here? And the next thing you know, they're going to be asking the president-elect, what do you think about these questions?
In Texas, we've had two big flaps with both projections and close-up and all kinds of aerial activity that clearly falls in the UFO category, with jets pursuing them. Mm-hmm. What do you think if the non-human phenomenon, whatever it is, whatever the source, would act now between now and the spring? Do you think it would be good or bad?
Depends what you mean by act. I mean, I get a sense that the boys upstairs are moving the process along. You know, I mean, when they start flying stuff around to Crawford Ranch, I think that's a message. You know, it's not like they stopped, landed, and started handing out press releases or anything. You know, hey, look, we're here. We're going to be, you know, out in the open pretty soon. Get your butt in motion. No, but they're turning up around the Crawford. They got jets flying around, all this stuff. And the government's having to say, what jets? We don't know from jets. Everybody's embarrassed. They're pushing the thing. Now, would they do something dramatic, like park a mothership over Montana?
Or all over the world.
That would be a terrible thing. Because if they do an act like that, and enforce disclosure before the governments of the world have done their job and initiated disclosure themselves, they disrupt, literally break every social contract of every nation in the world, where the people can look at the government and say, man, you stink, right? You lied to us. You didn't tell us about it. You still haven't told us about it. Now they're flying motherships over my town. What the hell? Why do I want to pay you any money anymore? You talk about disruption. On the other hand, if the governments come forward properly and say, yes, we've known about this. Here's what we know. What more do you want to know? Here's some new technology. Look forward to that 80 cent a gallon gas. And go, that's good. And then you start thinking about it for a couple of years, 3-4 years. And after a while, it's like old news. The news cycle on this will only last so long, too. And after the news cycle's over and nobody wants to hear about the ETs anymore, they can park all the motherships up there they want. Most people go, hey, great, the motherships are here. I make the joke. You know, they're finding all these planets out there.
They're finding them every month.
It used to be, we don't know if there's any planets out there. Now they're, oh, man, we got 25 today.
They're finding Earth-like.
Yeah. Then they'll project, oh, there's 46 billion planets. You know, guess what? In the galaxy out there over the last 50 million years, lots of planets just like ours have gone through the same thing. This is not new. Life emerges, it evolves, it develops sophistication, it develops brain power, it becomes sentient, it develops technology, it learns about the rest of the galaxy. This is not a big deal. It's just a big pain. And so we need to get on with it. We need to birth this baby and get on with building a civilization, probably in concert with these entities. Now, if it turns out that they don't like us and they want to come down and open up a can on us, well, I would prefer that all of us were there to take them on rather than simply standing there and want to know what's going on when the hammer comes down. And then we get an email from the government say, oh, you know, we meant to tell you about these guys, but, you know, we didn't think you could handle the truth. Well, they're here. They're taking over. Sorry. Thank you. We're leaving for, you know, whatever.
And we know historically that does not seem to be where the evidence is. In fact, if there is evidence, it is that what we're dealing with now goes back 5,000 years and probably a lot longer, and that it's been interacting with this planet for a very long time. And we just happen to be now really waking up to it beyond gods and mythology.
In 1999, a good colleague of mine, whose name you will know but I cannot mention, took me aside and explained to me how he had learned just recently that the government – this was under Clinton. Remember, this would have been toward the end of the Clinton administration, a couple of years after the end of the Rockefeller Initiative – that one of the agents, I don't know, had actually signed a contract and delivered a project to a major public relations firm in Washington, D.C. And the assignment was, tell us how we can disclose this thing and look good. Okay? The essentially the exopolitical public relations of disclosure. That was 1999. The problem right now is not chaos. It's not people going crazy. It's not the collapse of religion. The problem is good public relations for the government that does this. And the issue right now for our government is that most of the bad public relations is with us. It's all good for China if they announce. It's all good for France if they announce. And in the UK, and if you're paying attention out there, the Vatican might even announce. I mean, the recent Vatican astronomer said, we got no trouble with ETs. Do you think he just woke up in the morning one day and said, you know, I think I'll call up the media and tell them we're cool with ETs. You know, I don't think I'll call the Pope. He doesn't need to know that. This is all happening for a reason.
Made me wonder what is coming down.
But if France or China or the UK announce, then the U.S. basically is just coming along for the ride. We are irrelevant. We have just announced the fact that we don't matter anymore. You know, we can tell you lies all day long. When it comes to telling you the truth, and we're not in the truth business here. France is in that business now. China's in the truth business. They got a 16% growth rate. They got men in space. They tell the truth all the time. Forget about us. We're old news. You know, we're going to make the collapse of the British Empire look like, you know, a prom dance. I don't think that's a good thing. I think America still needs to be a major leader in this world, because the best strengths of America are incredibly important. And if we lose our leadership role, those strengths are going to have to come from somewhere else. And I don't think they're there yet. And so it's not only in our interest, but in the world's interest, if we assert our leadership here and do what we need to do. We took the mantle of the truth embargo over. They deferred to us. Okay, complete the deal. End the embargo. Start the transition, right? A little reform of the national security complex is called for. A reform of the media is called for, so this never happens again. A reform of academia is called for, so we never have the entire university and college system get on board a government propaganda program for national security reasons and stick with it for 5 decades. No, I never do that. And I think in about 4 or 5 years, it's going to look pretty good around here. Now, as it happens, the man who took the chair when the music stopped is Barack Obama. So does he have the potential to become the greatest president of all time? He has the potential to become the greatest leader of any nation of all time, because he's coming in at the most profound event in human history at a time when enormous changes are needed, huge opportunities are there, and technically the means, the basis to do it is all there. We have the people's interest. We've got the internet. We've got worldwide involvement and cooperation and connections. If he plays his cards right, I mean, they're going to have to build a statue to him about 2 miles high.
And he's got good cards to play.
Hopefully. Now, can he be corrupted? Yes. Are there Dick Morris lizards in Washington, D.C. love to go higher on to him and tell him what to do? Yes. Will he stay away from that? Let us hope so. But what I see so far, I'm impressed.
It is politics, Stephen.
But George and Steve, what if Barack Obama is presented with a debriefing by MJ-12, mm-hmm. all of them? Yeah. And he comes away and he says, no, I'm signing an executive order that will classify this for another 5 generations in the interest of national security.
Let me step out.
I don't even think they'll tell him. No, I don't think they tell standing presidents.
No. But that's the way it used to be. Not now. Let me step out of line here and say something that, you know, I could be wrong about, but I feel strongly about. This is going to happen in the spring, not because Barack Obama goes to the military intelligence management committees and says, well, I'm going to do this. It's going to happen because the people in the military management committees are going to go to him and say, you're going to do this.
Mm. Why would they do that, Steve?
Yeah.
Because if they don't do it and we don't get that technology, their problems are going to become big time. And the United States' problems are going to come big time. And the vast majority of all the people, even in the deepest realms of the black budget world, are patriots. And they don't want to see the country go down. And they also don't want to see France be the disclosure nation. And the time is now. And so they're going to tell him to do it. And I think he's the kind of man that is going to be fine with that. I mean, I don't think he would say no or even back down. However, it's a complex world. Now, it would be very helpful for when that meeting comes. And I think John Podesta will have the initial meetings. And he'll be the one that will liaise. And then eventually Obama will be brought in. But when the time comes for the final decision to be made, are we going to proceed or not? I would like to have 1 million faxes and emails sitting in the transition office of Barack Obama in a big giant pile that has already been reported in a number of press from the American people saying, yeah, I think we can handle the truth and we have a right to know. Would you please go ahead with this?
Let's try to get Podesta on the show, Stephen. Let's give it a try.
Can't lose.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you haven't picked up a copy yet of our book, Worker in the Light, it's only $7.99. It's on Amazon.com. It's a paperback, the small paperback, $7.99. There's also a direct link to Amazon at coasttocoastam.com. UFO researcher Richard Dolan, very well degreed, and he has now finished part one and two of his published 500-page study, UFOs in the National Security State, now working on three, as a matter of fact. His historical narrative explores the national security dimensions of the UFO phenomenon, and Richard is here for the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference.
You know, earlier, Richard, John Alexander was saying that from his point of view, he knew that all of our radar systems, all of our military information gathering systems for at least 5 or 6 decades have picked up anomalous phenomena that would be categorized in the UFOs. But yes. On the other hand, he says that he has never been able to find anybody in government who had actual documentation, photographs, or proof that this phenomena suggests. And it raises for me, to somebody who is a historian and you've got this new book that's going to come out, mm-hmm. what is the best evidence coming to you from the military itself, firsthand knowledge, that we are dealing with something that would fall into the category, I'm going to use those words in documents, extraterrestrial biological entities?
Yes, Linda. Well, I would say in the new book that I have coming out, which is Volume 2 of UFOs in the National Security State, this is another second 500-page history dealing with the UFO phenomenon from the early 1970s up to the end of the Cold War, 1991. It's a really good break-off point. One of the things that I would say is I've got about 170 to 175 military encounters that I've delineated in this book, most of which are based on very, very strong primary document sources, a few of which are less solid, but a good 100 at least are based on very, very solid data that show military encounters with UFOs. Now, these are from countries around the world. They're not all the United States. They're from everywhere.
And what would be the strongest in your mind?
Well, there are several cases where we know for sure that pilots have fired missiles at UFOs, and these missiles have had absolutely no effect, but we continue to fire on them. So clearly there's some kind of trouble in paradise, and we know that there's some activity going on that's not officially supposed to be happening. You have cases in the U.S., in South America, in Europe, the Middle East. There was the famous case in 1976 over Tehran in Iran where a pilot launched a missile at the object as he was about to launch it. As he was about to launch the missile, all of his electronics and communication systems went offline. This has happened many, many times. So to argue that there's no cover-up, there's no conspiracy, I cannot understand this argument where you have military forces around the world clearly knowing that they are supposed to go after these unknown objects. There's obviously a policy in place. When John Alexander earlier in this show mentioned that all of the data, all of the sources of collection are tracking anomalous objects. That was the single most significant thing that I think he said in that interview. Right. There are other things that I chatted with him after his interview and before this one with me about some of the things that he said. And in a friendly way, I did take issue with him, in particular the fact that he said that there's no evidence of missing trillions of dollars. I said to him, look, How can you say that when you have statements of Donald Rumsfeld in 2001? And not only that, because the Rumsfeld statement gets quoted many times, but through the 1990s, there were 4 or 5 major statements by congressional groups and Pentagon groups that mentioned trillions of missing dollars. So this is not something that Rumsfeld just pulled out of nowhere. And I didn't really get a satisfactory answer on that question. So there are many, many things that go beyond our official tallying of what is our government. There's overwhelming evidence that we have a black government that is not subject to oversight, or at least sufficient oversight. And this money just goes into the hole. Who knows where it comes out? We're not dealing with the official system of government, as I think we all grew up believing that we had.
And do you think right now, with this new change to Barack Obama as the new president-elect, do you think there's a leverage point coming up here in this coming year?
I think it's possible. I think it is possible, yeah. I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't wager that is going to happen. I would give it less than 50%. But I've discussed this with my good friend Stephen Bassett for many, many years. And I have to say, I think if there's going to be a point to do it, this would be the time. This really would be an excellent time to make a voluntary disclosure. We are in the middle of a tremendous sea change in American politics at this time.
And world politics.
Yes, absolutely, and the world. And so
India is going around the moon right now for the next 2 years. India is going to have a craft orbiting the moon.
They're going to map the moon better than we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. America is losing, is in danger of losing its real edge over the other nation. I mean, for 50-plus years, if you're going to do something in space, it was going to be America or the Soviet Union. And that is no longer the case.
Well, I told Richard Hoagland that my prediction is Obama will accelerate our space program dramatically. Mm. That's my guess. Mm. It's good PR. John Kennedy did it. He will, too.
But where are they going to get the money?
They just make it.
And the dollar goes down.
There's
nothing behind it. They just make
money.
It. They call up their friends at the Federal Reserve and they say, you print it. Well, worry about it.
You know, when you put it that way, George, I start to wonder now. Maybe
25 years from now, the dollar will be back.
It sounded good at first.
That's what they'll do.
Well, in terms of there's the military body, and then as you evolve up into the Cold War, and there have been assertions by some people in the so-called Majestic 12 group that said that the United States and Russia had a concocted Cold War in order to cover up the extraterrestrial issue that both countries were concerned about, and that the United States had a Cold War in order to do ET technology and research in which we needed some help with Russia.
Well,
or Soviet Union then.
Maybe. I would agree that I don't interpret the Cold War in a conventional way. I don't see it as a standard U.S. against the Soviet Union. I do believe that there were agreements behind the scenes and that there is a, you know, part of that agreement meant mutual hegemony in each of their spheres, and they were both quite happy with that arrangement. And I think there's probably more behind the scenes control by, let's call them elite groups that could very well have been pulling strings on both sides of the Iron Curtain. That's possible. Whether the ET connection is part of it or not, I wouldn't know, Linda. It would be hard for me to say one way or the other. But we have to know this, that the UFO phenomenon is the great elephant in the dining room that's never mentioned. It's a huge part of our national security history, and yet it never gets discussed in official media, official academic sources. It's as if it doesn't exist, but it does exist. And so, therefore, we have to assume it has a large covert footprint on our history.
And why is it so threatening?
It's threatening because it's threatening now because after 60 years of secrecy, it just would blow too many interests away that have benefited from that secrecy. I think that the reasons for the secrecy evolved over many years. I do think that in the 1940s, it would be very logical for the president, say Harry Truman, to, when presented with the information of, you know, alien beings and we've recovered exotic technology, he might just logically say, all right, let's study this. Let's decide what we want to do about it. Let's not panic people yet. Let's figure out what we're dealing with. Okay. And then he would gather together an elite group of individuals, say you, and let's figure this out and, all right, come up with a contingency plan and so on.
MJ-12.
Absolutely. But then the problem with that, something that may have started legitimately as a public interest or at least a national security interest in the legitimate sense, easily develops its own momentum and its own profit. And so what I think happens is once you've got this secret, let's say you've got this exotic technology, well, you can't figure it out, but maybe after 10 years you figure out a few things. And now you've got a great ground floor investment opportunity. You've got a great power leverage over the world and so on.
Becomes self-serving.
Exactly. And your incentive for giving up the secret vanishes. And then, of course, then there's the – once you give up the secret, then you get the anger aspect. You get a lot of angry people. Why have you kept the secret all this time? Think about the rumors of, say, the B-2 bomber, which have long been rumored to have some version of electrostatic gravitic working with it to reduce drag to save fuel. think about, this is a simple matter. You and I privately have talked about this.
That's right.
All right. The lawsuits that would be involved dealing with commercial airlining, which has been denied this for generations.
Right.
All right. That's a lot of fuel being blown out the air. And when we're looking at the petroleum situation right now, this is a serious issue. So there, once any president comes out and says, it has come to my knowledge that the UFO phenomenon is legitimate and indeed that there are extraterrestrial beings living among us, you can't just, you know, say, well, okay, well, I'm going to go on vacation. You have many, many issues to deal with. You're going to have many angry people, at least in the short term. Sure, in the long term, we all understand it's probably a very good thing. It will be a good thing for us because we've got to get the truth out. But in the short term, there are many powerful interests that clearly are not going to want – they're going to have the boat rocked on them, and they don't want that.
And they have to come up with some sort of a context for that first press conference that not only explains and says we're not alone, that we have had non-humans coming and going on this planet for a long time, but in the same breath, they have to neutralize any possibility of fear.
Well, right, and that's especially difficult when you go through the literature of the UFO phenomenon. And again, a lot of this is in my next book, UFOs and the National Security State. There's a certain amount of fear factor response that people have when they deal with these UFOs or the ET beings. It's a very easy way to destabilize a person if they're not ready for it. It's not clear that everyone is going to be able to deal with this as well as everybody else. We're going to have a large variation in how people come to grips with this.
Richard, 500-page study of parts one and two. You've got part three.
Each one is 500 pages,
so
yes.
We're talking about 1,000 and another 500
that is
probably
right.
coming.
That's right.
What was, in everything you looked at and found, discovered, what was the one case, the one issue that just was mind-boggling for you?
Oh, God.
And I'm sure there were many, but...
Well, some of the freakier things that I dealt with had to do with the career of Ingo Swann. I did a bit of study of Ingo. I had the opportunity and pleasure to meet with him. Ingo Swann's Mr. Axelrod story is one that has not left
bizarre.
My consciousness. It's a fascinating story. It's obvious you're familiar with it. For those who haven't heard it, it's to summarize. Back in the mid-1970s when Ingo Swann was doing all kinds of remote viewing for all different agencies, it wasn't just all at SRI, he got requests quite frequently, he said. He got this one from a friend of his who said, when you get a phone call from a Mr. Axelrod, I strongly suggest that you follow up and do this. Mm-hmm. So he did. 3 a.m, Axelrod's secretary said, can you be at the Smithsonian the next morning at the Elephant? He goes, long story short, he does remote viewing for this person at an underground base. He doesn't know where he's going because he's been blindfolded. Very bizarre. He meets with Axelrod for a couple of different occasions. The impression that I get is that Axelrod wanted Ingo to remote view the moon. And this was because Ingo Swann had recently remote viewed Jupiter and had correctly ascertained many, many factors about Jupiter before our first probe ever reached it, including the existence of a planetary ring, which was denied by, you know, shocked scientists. So Inga does all this remote viewing for Axelrod, and then Axelrod just disappears. And I have got to say that I have never had the feeling that Axelrod was what he appeared to be, which was a straight-up human being working mm-hmm. for some deep black agency. There were bizarre things about this guy and the so-called twins that he had working
right.
with him.
That's right.
And I just I've never shaken this story.
You think he was an E.T.?
I wonder. Because here's why. Because just pretend that you and I, we're E.T.s, and Linda is a top-notch remote viewer, and we discover that she has the ability to learn things about
us.
Maybe us,
yeah.
right? So what would we
at
want to do?
At any place in the universe.
Right. Would we want to send a counterintelligence team to check her out and find out how good is she? Mm-hmm. Do we have anything mm-hmm. to deal with here? And this is what I wonder.
Yes.
So that's a story, and Ingo wrote about this in one of his books.
Penetration.
And As I mentioned, I worked with that, and I had the opportunity to talk with Ingo, and I included that in my book. That's in summary form.
And it suggests something that I've been told and others, that one of our government's greatest concerns is who is walking around on this planet that looks human but is not.
Yes. It's such a funny thing. When I think about the road that I've personally – all of us have traveled an odd road in this field, and I am no exception – 15 years ago, I started this transient interest in UFOs as a very, very nuts and bolts kind of person. I remain that way in my orientation, my historical study. But what one finds is that this is not a simple field, and there are many, many bizarre things going on. And part of the problem with disclosure is that any president is going to have to tell the world what is the current intelligence on what we think the nature of these beings are.
And their agendas.
And their agendas. And this is not necessarily an easy thing
it's
to deal with.
It's not good timing for that either right now. I'm not sure we can handle something.
Is there ever a good time? What I think is going to happen is that our society is moving so fast technologically, socially, politically, that there's going to be – something is going to happen. We're not going to will it, but it's going to will itself upon us.
I do think people would say, I knew it. I don't think the shock value would be there as it might have been in the 60s.
Well, I would agree. And I think one has to wonder, is there kind of a preparation program in place in conjunction with Hollywood to prep people?
We've always suspected Spielberg, for example,
right.
being in on this.
Right.
And Steven Spielberg is coming online with a company to do a quote-unquote paranormal website.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's been a long time in the works for him.
Okay. Well.
And why? That was exactly what went into my head. Why is he doing this now?
Because people love to watch that and listen.
Well, maybe something is coming and unfolding.
People love it, but as escapist or because maybe they just sense deep down that there's something in this world that they know is true that is being denied to them.
Well, I was bringing it up because what does Steven Spielberg really know from Reagan?
Well, right. There's the story, of course, relating to the screening of the movie E.T.
That's right.
And Spielberg told this to Jamie Chandray, if I'm not mistaken, that when the movie was screened at the Reagan White House in 1983, I believe, Reagan came up to Spielberg afterward and said, there aren't six people in this whole room who know how true that movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So if Spielberg now in 2008 going into 2009, who has been active in feature films and has done some of the most astonishing, is now going to be involved in a website that is going to be focused on UFOs and paranormal, I'm just curious about what is the timing in the face of everything else that's going on this planet. Because he obviously has been in on some inside info.
Soon enough, and we will be there, Linda. Richard Dolan, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure, George. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
And Linda, thank you for being on the program.
It's fun, and it's been great to be in a studio face-to-face again.
And thanks to Ryan Wood, Dr. John Alexander, Nick Pope, and Stephen Bassett, and all those who have been participating at this incredible UFO crash retrieval conference. I mean, it is truly remarkable, Linda.
It is. It's a mind expanding. This conference is really one of the best.
The Woods have concentrated on bringing top-notch caliber guests here, and they've done it again.
Yes.
And,
sixth year, and Ryan says it'll be 10.
Goal. That's right.
Really?
Great. He expects disclosure, full disclosure, within the next 4 years.
That was his original plan.
So who knows?
I think 4 years is possible.
It could very well happen. So anyways, thanks to both of you for being on the show.
Thank you, Linda, for your extra duty.
Up next, some of your intriguing phone calls from days gone by. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.